This is the Fantastic Books Podcast,
the fantasy and sci-fi book review podcast for fantasy fanatics, book nerds, and lovers of lore and stories.
Covering some of the most loved fantasy series as well as brand new novels.
With your hosts, Anna
and Sam. Let's see what we're reading this week. I'm talking about Brandon Sanderson. Welcome back, fantastic listeners. This is Sam.
And Anna.
And this week, we are covering Mistborn, The Final Empire, chapters 30 and 31.
And if last time we said we were the calm before the storm, we are in the storm now.
It is getting heavy out there. I love these next two chapters. There's so much fun action and emotional dialogue between great characters. And it just, things are really getting intense.
I'm really excited to talk about this.
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
Before we dive into chapter 30, we don't have any announcements. I just wanted to do a small plug to remind you all to follow us on Instagram, Facebook at fantasticbookspod.com, and check out our website where you can find book reviews, merch, and all updates of upcoming books and news that we have for the podcast.
For those of you listening to us on Spotify, we do post questions and polls to encourage audience engagement and just get everyone involved with what we're talking about. So please be on the lookout for that. We love interacting with you guys. We love receiving messages and just talking about our favorite stories.
And then one shameless plug also, don't forget to leave a review, or on Spotify, you can give a stars review. So either of those really help the podcast grow, as well as word of mouth. If you know other fantasy book listeners who have listened to or read the Mistborn books or the Kingkiller Chronicles, definitely send them to listen to the podcast. It helps our community grow so much, and we are always excited to meet other fantasy book readers.
That being said, let's dive right in. Chapter 30.
The little blurb at the beginning of this book, I was surprised to see that they continued after we got the conclusion to the book in the last chapters that Vin had read, translated by Sazed.
Yeah.
So I thought we had received everything and they weren't going to continue, but they do continue all the way through the book. And this one talks about or foreshadows the betrayal by Rorschach, or his understanding that Taris people, he believes, are dominant rather than subservient, and that the character Elendi, who's supposed to be the hero of ages, should not be fulfilling their prophecy, even though the prophecy says it will be an outsider. So he's feeling bitterness and jealousy towards Elendi. And again, since we now know that he becomes the Lord Ruler and betrays Elendi, it's just sprinkling in a lot of foreshadowing here.
And it's funny, where the first time I had read this passage, I didn't really pick up too much on it on the second and third reads even. But when we were rereading this chapter in preparation for that episode, I noticed this and I was like, wow, yeah, this is a really clever little tidbit before the revelation at the end that Rorschach betrayed Elendi and took the power for himself.
I think Brandon Sanderson did a good job of putting in just a few character names into these blurbs and spreading them out. So it's hard to connect the dots and keep track of who all these referenced characters are, because we have Rorschach, we have
Quan,
and a few others. And it, again, I kind of just brushed them aside as world building at the time, not thinking that these characters would be directly important by name to the current story. Again, on reread, it's much clearer, but I like how well he balanced that line of, do I overtell or do I undertell what's happening in the past?
Yeah. One other thing I noted with this blurb in the beginning of the chapter is that it mirrors the uneasiness and the tension that Vin now experiences at the ball at Keep Venture currently.
Let's talk about this unease at the ball.
Yeah, I love the way the stage is set. We're finally back at Keep Venture. Vin was actually really looking forward to this ball. It does not go the way anyone would have expected it to go.
No, definitely not. The first part of the ball when she and Sazed arrive is already off to a bad start. She noticed that things are almost too perfect. People have spent a lot of time preparing for this and making a show of their house's power and order, as well as the way people are milling about. People aren't having the same kind of interactions as they normally do with the balls. They're standing in little clusters. There's more soldiers around, more guards around. So the people attending the ball are acting very differently than usual.
The tension's high. At one point, Vin describes this ball as more of a funeral than a party. She doesn't realize right away that an announcement's been made that this is going to be the last ball for a long time.
Yeah, people are using this time to solidify alliances. They're not as interested in flirting or dancing or building alliances. This is the last chance you get to just take what you have and make it final and good for your house.
Right. Because Vin is unaware of this, she's doing her usual moseying about and trying to engage in conversations with different groups, and no one is having it.
It was so confusing when I first read this. I thought that Ellen had discovered that she was Ska since he borrowed his dad's spies in the previous chapters, and I thought it had now become common knowledge through gossip that something was weird about Vin or that she was a phony or a fake. I think if it had been revealed that she was full Ska, they wouldn't have allowed her to come here like this, but it almost felt like a public ridicule.
Yeah, I was worried that, similar to her own theory, that Chandelariel was at work during the last time that they engaged in conversation and that turned everyone against her.
Right, because when she gets there, she goes up to a couple of groups and starts talking to them. And even within the first group that she goes into, someone says, yeah, I'm going to go get a drink, instead of engaging with her, like, as soon as she walks up.
Yeah.
And then a couple other people follow. So it's like, that's why I thought Vin herself was being ostracized. So I think it is a little bit strange behavior-wise, but I guess people are treating their alliances as, like, firm groups, and you just shouldn't talk to someone who's not in your alliance group.
Right, and House Renew is way too neutral, and everyone's like, ain't nobody got time for that. But it did feel personal, and as the audience in that perspective, you're worried for Vin, too, because you're like, oh god, what did we do?
Right, like, what did Ellen find?
After Vin gets snubbed socially by everyone, she does regroup with Sazed, and he decides that Kelsier needs to be notified of this information immediately. And Vin tells him, all right, go do your thing. I'm going to stick around. I think it'll look worse for House Renew if I leave too soon. So she sticks around. Immediately, not a good sign if Sazed and Vin separate.
Yeah, it made me nervous. Vin was really adamant that he goes because Kelsier is working as an informant tonight. And if he misses this huge piece of political news, it's not even gossip at this point. It's really important that the house war is essentially in full swing. All balls coming up have been canceled. A couple of the great houses have left, so there's no one even left in their houses to host the balls. This is when the two divide, and it spells danger for Vin, for sure.
A lot of the time when Vin goes it alone, it does not end well. So I think this is definitely a moment of trepidation. As Vin continues to socialize, she tries to have a conversation with Ellen, but of all the places he would be, he's not on the balcony reading. He's up front and center at his family's dining table, eating dinner with his dad. His clothing is well tailored and fitted. His hair is even combed. He does not have the disheveled appearance that he normally has. So something is definitely wrong.
I think his dad would say things are finally going right because Ellen is following all the rules he's supposed to be following.
Yeah, he's definitely acting the part of the firstborn son of a great house.
He's the only child of the Venture House, right? Okay, never mind.
All will be revealed.
I remember maybe something about a half-sibling. He's the only recognized child, correct?
Yes.
Okay, we won't get into that right now, but Vin and Ellen have this really important conversation, and I think it's a really big test of Vin's character and persona, as well as her maturing as an adult. But it also is really important for the plot.
Yeah, and it's sad where Ellen essentially tells Vin that he knows she isn't who she says she is, that she's been playing the game. And even though Ellen never wanted to even play the game, he himself had been played. feeling betrayed, he tells her that they can't see each other, that there's a house war looming, he needs to do his duty as a good son, and that they can't interact anymore. And it's just, it's really sad, and poor Vin, she definitely gets her heart broken.
Even Brandon Sanderson said in his annotations for this that Ellen is mostly angry that Vin has played him and he feels foolish. He's not as mad about the fact that she lied about who she was. You know, like, he's not mad about the lie. He's mad about feeling used.
Yeah.
I think that plays into what we said last episode about how Ellen never had the discussion with Vin of, like, this is who you are. You're a Mistborn. Like, you've been hiding this the whole time. I think he gets this bit of letdown here where he has to reconcile that. And the emotion he comes away with is disappointment in himself, not in her.
Which is a very unique reaction and experience.
Because
I think a lot of the time as the reader, we are expecting more of that first option of betrayal and anger.
I think that that's an easy way to take a character. And I like that he took Ellen in the different direction. I think it makes Ellen more responsible. Instead of saying, oh, this situation is Vin's fault because she played me, he's saying, this situation is my fault because I thought I could ignore the politics and the games of court, but I can't. And so I'm the one who's been duped, and I can't blame all the people around me.
I think that also plays to Ellen's personality, because he's forever the scholar and philosophizer. And those are always very, like, intrinsic thoughts of himself, his identity, his persona.
Right, instead of saying it's everybody else's fault.
Right.
But I think that's why in book two, he's going to make a good leader, because he's not saying, oh, like, my kingdom's not going to go well, or things aren't going well because of everybody else's fault, but it's my burden as the leader to take these things on and try to fix things for others.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we're talking other books, I feel that Ellen has such a phenomenal character arc. I love his character by the end of the trilogy. It is such a fun ride, and I just really enjoyed seeing his glow up.
I mean, I don't know that much because, again, I haven't gotten far into book two, but I do know that he becomes, we even get it in the end of this book, he does become king. And I think it's one of those situations where you can see why leadership is good for someone who doesn't crave leadership and attention. And I think even in this moment of conflict where you all want to say, fuck you, Ellen, how could you treat Vin this way? You can see that he's not really mad at her.
No, he's just being resigned, and he essentially cuts her loose and says, you know, it's best that we just go our separate ways.
There's one tiny moment in the middle of this conversation as he turns to leave from her, and he says, I expected it. You're just playing the game, like we all are. And then as he's leaving, he sort of mutters under his breath, like I am. Ugh. And so I think that's that glimmer of hope in this moment, though, where we know that this isn't really Ellen's true feelings. He's just given up trying to resist playing this quote-unquote game, and he's doing what his father's asking him to do. And he's breaking things off with Valette because of what he's discovered. And it's just part of the politics, and that's not really what Ellen wants to be doing.
No. As he walks away, I love this description of Vin becoming heartbroken that, you know, it was worse than her starving, worse than Cayman's beatings. You know, she can't reconcile this horrible feeling, and it's her, you know, being brokenhearted. It's just such an intense thing for her because she's been abandoned and let down and betrayed so many times in her life. I know she's never had her heart broken, so just a new trauma for her.
And then she gets the return of Rean's voice in her head. It's been gone for a long time throughout the book, and it's back saying, everyone's always going to betray you. I never came back for you. Ellen's not going to come back for you. You just have to expect everyone to abandon you. And that becomes the basis for a huge conversation Vin has in the next chapter that we'll talk about in a little bit.
As she's emotionally at rock bottom, who shows up?
Ugh.
But Lady Cliss.
This was quite a shock.
I love this. Oh. So. Vin immediately tries to dismiss her and say, you know, I'm not in the mood to talk right now. And Cliss is like 10 steps ahead. She goes, oh, what's wrong? You finally got dumped and spurred by Ellen.
So even though Cliss is gloating a little bit about the fact that Vin was spurned by Ellen, she's actually there because she needs to have a message delivered to Lord Renew that the gossip that Vin was spreading last fall was fake and Clis knows it. And in order to keep her mouth shut, she is blackmailing them, essentially. She's exacting a fee. Vin puts two and two together and realizes that Clis is actually an informant. And she's been working as an informant, fronting as the court gossip.
Brilliant.
Which is brilliant because everyone knows she's the gossip, but they tell her things anyway and use her to spread lies. But Clis is smart enough not to fall for those lies. And then she'll turn around and sell that information to somebody else.
Yeah, because what's the motivation for lying? What are you hiding? So there's always something to be gained. To quote Kelsier, there's always another secret.
Very good. Very good.
And what I love, absolutely love about this persona for Lady Clis is no one suspects the fool. They always underestimate these people.
Yep.
So what a good persona and character to bring to court. Someone who's a little loud, a little overbearing, who's a gossip.
A little bit obvious.
Yeah, where they're like, oh, she's an idiot. Brilliant. Awesome.
Yeah, she had us played until the end. We both fell for it, too. Very surprising character, because I thought she was just a filler court person. But she also has information that Vin is now trying to get, which is about Shan Alariel's plans against Elend. And of course, you know, she's the gossip. She is the informant. So everything comes at a price.
And Vin has no money on her. To get this information, she immediately relinquishes her sapphire necklace. But Clis is just evil, where she only gives her part of the information because information of this magnitude has great value, and being the opportunist that she is, wants to get everything that it's worth.
So the information that she gives to Vin at first is that Elend is going to be one of the first venture casualties in the House War. But Vin wants to know where he's going to be attacked, how he's going to be attacked, when he's going to be attacked. Clis clams up at this point and will not tell her.
And this is the moment where Vin...
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, it's so awesome. Like, nothing to lose, everything to gain. This starts using some very intense emotional allomancy and threatens slash terrifies Clis into revealing what's going to happen to Elend.
But Clis recognizes that Vin is pushing her emotions that hard because Vin essentially punches her with emotions. She's going that extreme. So Clis now knows she's an allomancer, which gives her gossip that she can turn around and sell to other people. So Vin gave up information, in essence, in order to get this information about Elend, which puts her in a precarious position, theoretically, moving forward.
What I think is fascinating about the machinations of this plot against Elend is, essentially, Shan Alariel and a team of allomancers are going to assassinate Elend in his rooms where they have their philosophical conversations. It's going to look like Elend was assassinated to help start the House War, but also the Ministry is going to find all those books that he has that question the Lord Ruler.
Right, so it sounds like Lord Venture orchestrated this in tandem with Shan. I'm not sure if he hired them or if it was a joint plan, but then as a bonus, because Elend's friends are from House Hastings and House Leckle, theoretically, Shan and her assassins will be able to get rid of all of them. But then will be the reveal of all the mysterious books that Lord Venture didn't know Elend had. So this plan is going to backfire on him a little bit.
And the other houses, because it could argue that the houses are also questioning the Lord Ruler's domain.
Well, also two of their heirs are going to be killed.
Yeah, so it is just spells trouble for everybody.
Yeah. So Clis agrees to keep Vin's allomancy a secret as long as she gets proper payment by the next day. And she does sneer at Vin because even though she's given her this information, she says, oh, well, Elend might already be dead. And even if he's not, Keep Venture is so difficult to navigate, so confusing. There's so many passageways. You'll never get to him in time.
Clis even asks, what are you planning to do? He just broke up with you. What do you owe him? And Vin mentally decides that she does love him and she wants to help him no matter what, even if he treated her poorly, which is huge for her character. I think that whenever it came to relationships or loyalty or sticking around, she was always a runner and kind of in it for herself. So now that she's planting her flag and defending Elend and is going to stand by him, even if he hurt her, is huge for her character.
And we see that reflection with the way Kelsier felt about his own wife.
Oh, and I can't wait to talk about that, about chapter 31.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it now when she realizes she's been betrayed or hurt, and she still continues to choose to love him over everything else.
You don't stop loving someone even if they've hurt you.
So good. So what does she do? She has to save Ellen at this moment. So Kliss is trying to wedge that knife in deeper and make Vin feel worse about herself. But it's actually the fire that ignites Vin to say, like, no, I have to save Ellen. So she decides that she needs to find a way to Ellen's rooms as easily as she can. And Kliss unintentionally warned her that going through the castle or the keep is going to be extremely difficult. So since she's misborn, no big deal. She decides to go up onto the roof and find a balcony that leads to Ellen's rooms.
So as she's making her way up, she finds this giant rose-colored window. And with some good old-fashioned allomancy, it's a lot of hard work, but she finally pushes hard enough to blast open this window and soar into the misty night.
I think in the annotations, Brandon Sanderson said that this was one of the first visual images he had of a fight, like smashing through a stained glass window. And I love that imagery. It's such a brightly colored window smashing into the like white opaque mist. I think it's a really interesting symbolism and as well as just like pure imagery.
It's powerful imagery and easy to visualize in your mind, and it just looks so cool.
Yeah, I think it might just be like there for cool factor.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I suppose you could say something about the symbolism of smashing a piece of glass that's reserved only for the nobility, or Vin smashing through this barrier that people have put her in, or whatever. Like, we could unpack that a lot, but also like very cool visualization as well.
Yeah, it's just cool. So now that Vin's on the outside, trying to make her way to the balcony and the roof to try and save Ellen, she decides that her garments are getting in the way.
Yep, so she starts to take them off, ends up basically in her underwear, which is kind of hilarious.
Undie fight.
But she's not sure where to go. She's using her tin and has to search out other allomancers, but obviously they're using copper clouds to shield themselves.
Right. So she starts burning and flaring brass, and she's attempting to pierce a copper cloud.
Which she has done before, or is this the first time she's done it?
This is the first time she's successful at doing it.
Okay. I think maybe she had senses or like inklings of this before, but this is the first time she's consciously tried to do it. And it's worked. So she follows the pulses. She comes across figures ahead in the mists. And it's not just one assassin or two assassins. It's several. And this was the huge reveal that it is Shan Alariel herself. Kliss didn't say that it was Shan. She just said Alariel assassins. So we are as off guard as Vin is in this moment when we first read it. I was shocked. I did not expect her to be Mistborn.
No, that was such a big reveal, and I was stoked for it because it made Shan that much more intimidating as an adversary.
Right. At first, she just seemed like the character who had emotional allomancy, so she was a player of the court games and could manipulate people really well, but she's actually extremely strong and powerful, too.
Yeah, like she can back up all these threats.
So Shan was also quite surprised that Vin is Mistborn, and I liked that it was another moment of a character's persona not matching who they were. So, like, we thought Kliss was silly and frivolous, and she's actually powerful. Shan thought Vin was weak and foolish, and she's actually powerful. So we're getting a lot of people's expectations flipped around. But now it's time to go into fight mode. Vin is fighting several coin shots. Full other Mistings and Mistborns are here with Shan, so it's a pretty intense fight.
Yeah, it's like a full death squad.
Yeah, Vin's definitely outnumbered, out-experienced, I guess you could say. She also doesn't have weapons. She has just a few coins with her. So she did not show up to this fight with the things that she needs for success.
No, not at all, but she still manages to get the upper hand on a bunch of the Mistings. She takes out one of the pewter arms with a spray of coin shots. She gets the better of a couple of the coin shots as well, just by being a very clever allomancer.
And then it's just down to her and Shan.
And this is where things get intense, because Shan is very skilled with the obsidian knives that she has, or the glass daggers.
And Vin doesn't have those at all or didn't train with them very much. So again, she's just not as well equipped in this moment, except she remembers a vial with ATM that she has.
Yes.
So this is her one shot at getting any kind of upper hand. And so she drinks it. But of course, Shan also has ATM. So they're in a standoff. It's just those shadows whipping around in every direction and dimension. And it's just a matter of whose is going to run out first. So this is a terrible position to be in because obviously we all know and Vin knows that Shan, coming from a powerful house, definitely is going to have more ATM than she does.
Yeah. So while they're having this stalemate, Vin also sees that there are guards from House Venture shooting wooden arrows at her. So just the stakes keep rising. The danger is mounting and she's getting attacked on like all sides.
I love that the danger is mounting up here and Ellen is just sitting under the skylight that they're all looking through and fighting around above him like, hum-dee-dum-dee-dum, I'm going to read my book.
Yeah, like, what do you think of this philosopher's writing?
It's just a funny imagery to me. But as you said, the stakes are getting higher and higher. One wrong move and Vin is going to be dead. So this is where her street smarts come into play.
Right. She realizes that she can't run away because Shan has too much ATM, that her only option is to attack.
Which I think is really different from the very, very beginning when they're planning the heist. They're talking about what to do with the garrison, and Vin says you have to run away or lure them out. You know, she says, like, you shouldn't fight somebody bigger than you because it's just going to use up all your energy. And for what?
Right. And so now she's no longer following her previous self's advice. She's growing and she's attacking challenges head on.
And this moment is so clever. Since they're both in this stalemate, waiting for the ATM to run out, Vin extinguishes hers before it actually runs out entirely. And so Shan thinks she's got the upper hand. She starts coming up to her. She's got the daggers swinging at her. It looks like Vin is about to go down. And at the last moment, she uses her ATM to grab an arrow out of thin air that's flying. And she rams it into Shan. And then it breaks off. And then she rams the shaft again into Shan's chest. So she's like double hit. Shan falls. She's triumphant.
It's such an awesome move to burn your ATM at the last minute because it throws off what Shan was about to do because she gets confused. And that momentary pause is just enough for Vin to get the opportunity to attack and stab Shan with that arrow that flew through the air that she catches.
Because she could use the ATM to catch the arrow.
Right. It's just all of it was just so cool.
It's so well thought out. But also, like, clearly it was just relying on Vin's instincts.
Yeah, just street smarts. So good. I love that fight sequence and her just taking down someone that's bigger and badder than she.
The soldiers are still down below shooting more arrows, so Vin decides it is time to get the heck out of Dodge, and she pushes herself off into the night. One thing that I was talking about when we read this, though, and I don't know if this would be helpful in any kind of way, but for some reason, I just imagined her dropping Shan's body through the skylight down into Ellen's rooms as part of throwing a wrench into this house war.
I know. If the time allowed it, it makes sense as far as plotting is concerned to be like, Shan Alariel's dead.
Who killed her?
Who killed her? Why is she here? She's a Mistborn. But then also, would anyone put one and two together as, was she here to attack Ellen?
But imagine even if Vin just dropped her body down from one of the stained glass windows, not into Ellen's room, but one of the windows into the ball. The queen of the court is dead.
Yeah, that would have been.
And she's wearing a mist cloak and she just fell through the sky and nobody knows who did it. That'd be pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
If this was more about building the house war, that becomes less important. I guess the end of the book.
Well, we're definitely entering the Great Sanderlanch.
Well, I guess like they don't need to keep building the house war. Like, it's built enough. It's going off on its own.
Yeah, it's definitely on its own now.
I just think it would have been a really badass and sort of confusing thing for Vin to do.
That's cinematically.
Right. I don't know. I was just expecting something more to happen with Vin doing something to Shan's body to, like, make a statement.
Yeah. But Vin's not vindictive.
Ugh.
I know. Sorry.
You do that all the time. Vin is not vindictive. She says farewell to Elend silently and then pushes off into the night.
And I love how that chapter ends there.
Chapter 31.
The blurb here is a little vague. We are led to believe that these are still passages from the logbook, but because Sazed finished translating it, I almost wonder if this is a direct translation from Rorschach, aka the Lord Ruler.
Yeah, I was wondering if he added to the logbook or if this is maybe even from a different document, because the person who's writing says, "I'm worried that historians will either make me out as someone who protected humans from a powerful evil, or will I be remembered as a terrible tyrant who took power to make himself a legend?" And I don't know, obviously, how everything goes down in the past with Rorschach and Elendi and the Well of Ascension and everything like that. But as soon as we read this, I was not sure whose perspective this one was from. And I'm not sure if in this book or the rest of the book, if all of the blurbs are from the logbook. Can you tell me, without spoiling too much, if we get blurbs from other documents?
We do. Okay. Eventually, research is done in the logbook. Entries are compiled in a certain order and a way for certain characters to decipher some of the information. Okay. So a lot of the logbook does come back in the trilogy, which is actually interesting.
Ooh, is it parts that we've read in this book come back, or do we get extra?
We get some from the logbook.
Okay.
Plus
from another
blurbs
source
that weren't maybe explored.
Okay, cool.
Plus other documents.
Awesome. Okay, I'm excited for that because I'm really interested in the lore of this. I think that's what I'm most excited about for the rest of the trilogy. I'm less excited about the political stuff that we had touched on when we started reading book two, or when I started reading book two, and the aftermath of everything that happens in Mistborn, the Final Empire. But I am really interested in Vin's development of Allomancy and some of the powers that she's starting to have, as well as all of the historical stuff.
Oh yeah, the lore's phenomenal. And I think with this blurb, I did mention that you tend to sympathize or maybe empathize with the Lord Ruler, and this paragraph shed some light with that.
Okay. Well, let's put it to rest for now, because I don't want to pick it apart anymore since you can't tell me anything.
I know. It's worth the read.
So. I know. All right. So what happens in this chapter is we switch perspectives and we get Kelsier and the crew hanging around again. And of course, they're just poking fun at each other. It is one of their nighttime debriefings where they're all gathering at Clubs' shop, but it's interrupted immediately by Vin having her grand entrance. She shows up covered in blood. She's holding her dress but not wearing it, so she's standing there essentially in her underwear, covered in blood, just bangs open the door and interrupts their pleasant little evening.
Like, imagine how bizarre that would be. Like, you're an uncle or a friend or a parent, and essentially, like, your high school child breaks down the door bloody in their underwear, dress in hand, is like, I killed someone.
I mean, the world that they live in is so different from ours. Like, murder's not out of the question, but no. Yeah, it's very dramatic.
Whew. So, everyone's obviously super concerned. They're like, Vin, what happened to you? What happened to your clothes? What is going on?
Why are you covered in blood? To quote the worst line in the Harry Potter movies, he's covered in blood again. Why is he always covered in blood?
Boo.
But anyways, yes, they are concerned because Vin is banged up and bloody and obviously has been through something big. And she reveals that she killed Shan Elariel pretty quickly into the conversation.
Right. Also reveals that Shan Elariel is a Mistborn.
Yeah. Oh, this is one of those scenarios, though, where I get frustrated with characters because they don't get a chance to start at the beginning and say what happened to them. Obviously, Vin is probably exhausted. She's in pain. She's in shock.
Running on adrenaline.
Everyone's throwing questions at her as soon as she opens the door, but she doesn't get a chance to say, like, hey, the house war is really starting. I interrupted this fight that was going to be happening where Ellen Venture is going to be killed, and I ended up killing a different Mistborn, so here's all the things that I did and the order I did them in and why. So they're jumping down her throat and disappointed that she would save Ellen when she's supposed to be on their side.
Yeah, the conversation definitely spirals out of control for Vin.
Mm-hmm. And it's made even harder because she's getting interrupted by Sazed stitching her arm and her face. Someone goes out to get her clothes, so people are coming in and out and tending to her, but she does not get a good chance to explain herself and her motives and the whole scenario.
That, and it's just been physically and emotionally an exhausting evening. She's just in a tough mindset to even be able to explain what's going on, let alone try to justify her actions and motivations.
Right.
Kelsier, although he primarily is concerned that she just fought off a whole team of Mistings and a Mistborn, explodes and questions why would she save Ellen Venture? He's a nobleman. Vin explodes at this, has finally had enough, and is justifying that he's a good man.
Kelsier, you're as much a nobleman as these people are.
Yeah, and everything but title. Like, you claim that you're Ska, but you haven't suffered the way that the Ska suffer. And this is where Vin has these anecdotes of her own suffering, of starving, being sick, witnessing murder, terrified of harm befalling her on a regular basis. Everyone in this room may have experienced hardship, but not the way that she has. And she kind of throws it in their face.
I think it needed to be said. Yeah. I think they are doing the right thing, but it is very easy for them to lose touch with who they're fighting for. And one thing that I hadn't put together, but was listed in Brandon Sanderson's annotations, is that he really compares Kelsier and their group to Ellen and his group of philosophers, and how both sit around and talk about making the world better and doing all these things to help, but it's really hard for them to understand the Ska in general. And I think that is a big part of politics, and I'm sure it's going to play out in the future books. People trying to help. Actually, even in the first part that I read of book two, where Sazed's going around trying to help people remember their histories and their religions, and they're like, hey, we're just trying to eat and not die of starvation. Like, the intentions are there, but the reality of people's lives is very different.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think it was really important for Vin to have this moment. She gets to really talk about how hard her life has been, and it pairs well with the themes of abandonment that she's reconciling in this chapter, having just had this whole thing happen with Ellen, and then what she's about to talk to Kelsier about in the next scene. Because after her blowout, she, instead of going to her room, climbs up on the roof where she can sit in the mists, and she really thinks about everything that happened with Ellen, but also Reen's voice going off in the back of her head all the time saying, just be angry at yourself. You knew people would leave. Everyone always leaves. Don't be surprised. You were foolish enough to think that they wouldn't hurt you.
Yeah, Vin is just so upset with herself. Kelsier comes up to talk to her, and they definitely have a great father-daughter moment here. And I like that he opens up the conversation with, watching the mists is relaxing, isn't it? And that, you know, the mists protect us. They give us power. They hide us. And it's really cool as the trilogy progresses, because there is some truth to this.
Ooh, okay. I'm excited about, again, the lore is what I'm really interested in digging deeply into.
It's so cool. But with this conversation, Kelsier and Vin really get to the heart of the matter, where they've both experienced hurt and betrayal from someone they loved, but that didn't stop them from loving that person.
I like that they both have this unique feeling, and it separates them apart from the other crew members, and I think it means that they can understand and empathize with one another better. But I think what's most surprising is that this conversation is set up for Vin to say, I loved him and he betrayed me, and you think she's talking about Ellen, but she's talking about her brother Reen. And this is, again, something that's been such a theme throughout the books, is how hard he was on her and how horrible he made her life. But she's talking about how she actually loved him. And she does reveal that Reen saved her life as a kid from their own mother, who was going to kill her. So Vin felt a loyalty and a love towards Reen because of that. But then the confusion when he left her and abandoned her is something she hasn't been able to get over. And I think that this conversation is so much more powerful, because at first it's like, oh, my boyfriend broke up with me, I'm really sad. And for Kelsier to come at Vin and say, you know, well, my wife, like the love of my life, is the one who betrayed me. And it's not actually Ellen, it's Reen who Vin can come to the table with and say, this is my own experience. I think it's just more powerful than if it was just her being sad about Ellen.
Yeah. I think it would have felt a little empty or paltry in comparison.
That's what I was trying to say. I know it was a little roundabout there.
No, no, but I, you know, full-heartedly agree. So it's nice that they can support one another, but also have a moment of grief in their hardship and pain together.
Yeah, that really helps them, or at least it helps Vin with a little bit of healing moving forward and understanding herself and her own abandonment issues that she does have as an undercurrent of her character.
Yeah.
But it also gives Kelsey a chance to apologize too and say, you know, you're probably right. I think I'm the Ska and I have this really harsh mentality towards nobility, but he kind of deserved that outburst that she gave him.
Which was very mature and understanding of Kelsey, because some characters can't admit when they're wrong, but he at least has the humility to do so with Vin.
Right. And then they talk about how this gives them a unique position where they can help the Ska. If Kelsier was just a regular Ska, he wouldn't be able to put together armies and lead this resistance. So even though it insulates him from the harsh life of a regular Ska, the Ska need him anyway.
And there's a great line there where they talk about how Kelsier should be more focused on helping the Ska rather than killing the nobility.
I think he does start to do that more after this conversation, too.
Yes, which really helps his rise to a godlike figure amongst the Ska.
Yeah, yeah.
During this conversation, though, we get a really important realization from Vin is that she can pierce copper clouds.
This is super important. So they actually get to test this theory a little bit. They're talking about betrayal, and Vin says she doesn't think Mare betrayed Kelsier. She thinks that their copper cloud was pierced and someone sensed her coming. Probably the Lord Ruler, but could be Inquisitors. You probably know. Don't tell me.
Nope.
But they get to test this out. So Vin reveals this to Kelsier, and she talks about how she actually used it that night to find Shan and the other Allomancers on the roof. And he makes her guess what he's burning. So he goes through burning different metals well under a copper cloud, and she can sense all of them. And for the first time today, when we were reading, she was talking about feeling allomantic pulses. But before she feels Kelsier, she can feel or sense a different one. And I think these are the drums from the mists, or the drums from the Well of Ascension, or whatever those drums are that keep getting mentioned. I never put two and two together before, because I was thinking the drums were physically a sound and the pulses were something you could feel inside of you. But I think they're the same thing now. This is the first time I've realized that it was in there.
You're on to something.
I know you can't tell me. I know you can't tell me. It's fun to guess.
Oh, that's like the whole reason why I love reading. I love doing the podcast with you. Just fun to speculate, do fan theories, just pick things apart. It's just so fun.
My current theory, now knowing this, is that somehow Allomancers were created out of the power that's in the Well of Ascension. And I think Vin is descended from like the first line of Allomancers. And that's why she's the most powerful.
Maybe. You might be onto something.
Okay.
You'll have to wait and see.
All right. All right. I'm just interested because Kelsier keeps saying she's super powerful. And he's surprised because he says other Allomancers have obviously tried to pierce copper clouds before. And he doesn't have an answer for why Vin can, except for the fact that she's powerful.
Yeah. And I do like that he supports her and says, like, you got to stop doubting yourself. Give yourself some credit. You're very good at being a Mistborn, and you have great skill and good powers, and have more confidence in yourself.
Exactly. Another small detail that was brought up during this conversation is that Vin does tell Kelsier about House Venture and the Atium, and that they're the ones in charge of harvesting and supplying it to the Lord Ruler. So Elend betrayed her. I don't think that's the reason why she ended up telling Kelsier this in this moment. I think it's more the fact that she was being vulnerable with Kelsier and they were talking about some personal things and like talking about some of their own like inner demons. And so being that open was a chance for her to tell Kelsier that.
I do like that Brendan Sanderson writes that Vin admits to Kelsier that the Ventures are in charge of the Atium mines, but she's not doing this out of spite, but just out of loyalty to the crew, giving them the information they need in order to do what's right.
I don't think she's doing it to hurt Elend. I think she's just trying to do good by the plan.
Right. And she even asked Kelsier, do what you will with this information, but try not to specifically hurt Elend.
Speaking of Elend, the end of the chapter is from his perspective. So now that he's being used as a narrator, we get more scenes from his perspective. And we find him and... is it Jace?
Yes, it is. And essentially their little book club gets interrupted with a misting flying through the stained glass or skylight of Ellen's room.
Right. They leave to hide all of the books.
Oh, yeah. They totally freak out, stash all their contraband anti-Lord Ruler books in a sack and hightail it out of Keep Venture in a stagecoach.
So right now they're on their way back, right?
Yeah. Essentially, it's like, all right, things have died down. Let's see what's going on.
I think it was really smart that that was their immediate reaction.
It was. I just love how opposite of heroic all that is, considering Vin was like, Ellen's in danger. I have literally nothing but the clothes on my back. I'm going to fight off a whole squad of Mistings and Mistborn to protect him. And then a bad guy falls to the ceiling and they're like, we got to get out of here.
And they think he's just there to find the books.
And meanwhile, like, oh, we're safe.
Nobody found our stuff.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I was like, no, they were here to kill you.
Right. Definitely not fully aware of the gravity of the situation.
Not at all.
They do talk a little bit about the results of the spying that Ellen has been doing on Valette.
Yeah, some actual critical information comes forward from a man named Felt, who I think is the Venture Chondra. He ended up doing some spying and reconnaissance and found out that Sazed had taken a carriage to Clubs' shop. And although Clubs is known as a ska craftsman, as a carpenter, there was a lot of suspicious things about the shop. It was soundproof, that there were watch nests on the upper floors and ceilings. So they are under the assumption that this might be a ska thieving crew.
A very good ska thieving crew.
One that's well-funded and skilled.
And this is the first time that somebody says, probably Lady Valette is part of this thieving crew. Hilariously, Ellen is relieved.
Yeah.
Because Vin isn't a spy from a different house. She's just a thief. And for Ellen, who has so much money and does have empathy for the ska, comes to the conclusion that poor Vin, she was just trying to get one over on me and rob me because she needs money and she's in desperate place in her life. And I didn't realize that I was so mad at her for being part of politics, but she's just trying to survive. So it's such a weird reaction.
It is. I think it's part of it's his philosopher coming out. I also think that Ellen is relieved where she's not loyal to maybe another noble house or another man, and that maybe their interactions are genuine.
I think that is part of it, because I think that what he's realizing is that she was just probably casing the joint so she could rob him, whereas if she was there to get information and spy on him, then everything she said is a lie.
And that she's actually out to harm him.
Exactly. Jace is still suspicious because Vin did spend a lot of time with other members of the court and not all of her time with Ellen. In fact, it was a pretty small amount of time with him. So if she was targeting just Ellen, it's a little bit odd. But Ellen doesn't really care. He's just A, excited about everything we just said, and then B, realizes Vin is ska, and he could have asked her so many questions about being ska and the fact that he was so fooled by a ska that they're clearly the same as nobility mentally and socially. It's just such a funny reaction, but he's so relieved.
He is, and it's awesome that the tables turn, where last chapter we have Vin saving Ellen. We now have Ellen protecting and saving Vin, where he tells Felt and Jace, don't speak of this to anyone. I have this under control. We're going to let it go.
Yeah, he does show his true character here. This is why when everything comes out in the wash, Ellen and Vin are not mad at one another. They're just doing the best that they can. And neither of them have ever specifically harmed the other or tried to do ill will towards one another. So I think that this is why they work out in the end.
Yeah, they've always been, for lack of better terms, equal.
Right, they're both equally trying to protect each other in a really tough situation.
Yeah, that's exactly what my sentiments.
When Ellen gets back, he's immediately summoned by his father, Lord Venture, who is disappointed that Ellen is alive.
Oh, he's bummed out for sure. He's like, oh, you're still here. Yes.
Right, but he's not playing it obvious that he wanted Ellen dead. He's playing the hand of relief, pretending that he's pleased that Ellen survived this attack, and reveals that Mistborn had actually been sent to assassinate Ellen. So Ellen is definitely more shocked because, like, he thought someone was just coming to spy on him. And then Lord Venture also reveals that one of the Mistborn who was sent to attack Ellen was killed by their guards, and that was Shan Ellariel herself.
Ellen's very surprised by this information because he wonders how a Mistborn was taken down by a normal soldier.
He also surmises that if Shan was the one sent to attack him and she had originally been engaged to him, maybe she was a plant from her house playing a long con with the intention that if they were to get married, then their child would be half Venture, half Ellariel, and then an Ellariel grandson would have claim to the Venture throne. Whatever they were doing is like a lot of complicated politics.
Oh yeah, super long con and very clever.
But then there's also some other confusion going on about the fight. So, like you said, Lord Venture said that Shan was killed by their archers, which Ellen finds a little bit suspicious. He also notes that the person who fell through his skylight, his dad tells him was dead of a broken neck, but Ellen knew for sure that that guy was still alive when they fled with their books. So there's confusion going on whether or not it's Venture intentionally duping Ellen or if there's just misinformation going around. We're not sure yet. But he does tell us what happened to the other people in the fight.
Yeah, so that second Mistborn that was fighting with Shan ended up surviving that collision with the soldier in midair and ended up taking off.
Yep, they found another person dead up on the roof. Venture says that some of their guards claim that there was a third Mistborn who was fighting the other two, but it wasn't one of their own.
AKA, it was Vin.
Exactly. And it's such an ironic end to this chapter because Lord Venture is laughing at Ellen saying, why would anybody else's Mistborn try to protect you? And Ellen says, maybe they want to protect somebody innocent. And his dad just can't comprehend why you would defend an innocent person using your own resources.
Yeah, it strategically makes no sense to Straff Venture, but love is a powerful motivator.
Also, from Ellen's perspective, you shouldn't just stand by and watch people die if they don't deserve it.
Yeah.
And I think that goes all the way back to the executions that the Lord Ruler put on that really clearly upset him as well. And just this idea that people in power should protect the innocent is something that I think is going to be a cornerstone of Ellen's ruling principles moving forward.
And I like how this chapter ends with Ellen hoping to keep his house in order so if they can survive all this, he can work things out with Vin.
It's funny because he's clearly caught up in adult level politics, but he's having like teenage level thoughts about romance.
Oh yeah. For so many portions of the trilogy, Ellen is always described as an idealist. And even here, so early on, he has these fantasies of what could be.
I just think it's funny. He's like, my life is falling apart, but maybe I'll get to talk to that girl I like again. It's realistic. Like, you look for that glimmer of hope things are going very poorly, but it just made me laugh.
Yeah, it was definitely entertaining. But this is actually where, you know, the chapter ends off, and whew, what a crazy amount of excitement that was packed into two short chapters.
This was such an awesome sequence of action. I really loved the pairing of Vin's big fight with Shan and this fallout from the house war and the reveal of Kliss being an informant and Shan being a Mistborn, doubled up with the chapter where Vin has to get super emotionally vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because she's physically vulnerable during the fights, and then to do an emotional vulnerability back to back. It's a really great combination of chapters for her and her growth and development. But also plot-wise, things are really changing and happening fast now.
Yeah, the dominoes have started falling and the great Sanderlanch is upon us.
Yeah, I don't think we have too many chapters left in the book after this. So this whole coverage of Mistborn, I'm thinking will be done by the end of 2023, maybe early 2024, depending on how things play out. We have a couple of mini series on the horizon, one with Brian Asher, and then at least a new author lined up for 2024 as well. So that might interrupt Mistborn coverage a little bit, but I'm happy to keep plugging through it because I really want to be able to read books 2 and 3 on my own.
Yes, they're so much fun. But until next time, listeners, happy reading.
Thanks, listeners. If you're looking for more, check us out at fantasticbookspod.com, where we have book reviews, reading list suggestions, merch, and you can even send us a message.
Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at Fantastic Books Pod.
And if you like what you've been hearing, don't forget to leave us a review.
Thanks.
Golden Rise Media.